lights sneak out of our minds tonight. Escape over.
We had some witty pre-show banter today, and it reminded me. Remember that show that we did last year where I just forgot to cut out like our opening part to it?
And Craig Goldstein was,
Craig
like,
was like,
"Hey,
wait a minute, I don't think you guys
I thought
edited this.
This is going to be really interesting for a second. Then you guys were just make complete asses of yourselves, but
we're
instead
like making jokes
you just
about
sounded
how
stupid.
Bud Light was marketing 9/11 to consumers, and like that was not our finest editing hour. Now that I do like a you know this MILB podcast that I like you know have a boss who oversees it and stuff, I feel like I need to do real editing, and so now it's bleeding over to the PDP, which is good. It's,
which is good.
It makes it fun. It's,
as it should be. Why yeah. Not?
Hey, welcome in, Tyler Mon, Anthony Masterson. Today on episode number 46 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, Woo. We were brought in by the last thoughts of Ezra Pound and the song Escape. You may know one of the members of The Last Thoughts of Ezra Pound. His name is Drew Kreisman. You can find him on Purple Row and on the old Twitter machine as well. Big thanks to Drew for submitting stuff to the show today. Last week we did our kind of David Letterman tribute. I was just holding like a business card in my hand, and as I thanked Drew, I tossed it aside as if I was a late night host. That was fun.
Of course.
That was fun. Hey, hi, Anthony.
Oh, hi, Tyler.
Episode number 46 today. We have a whole ton coming up on the show this day. I was going to say this morning, but then I timestamped the episode, and well, I ruined it anyway. Tell us who the 46th Memorial Edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast is for.
On May 29th at 8:43 a.m. on the Pacific Time
Pacific,
Zone.
Yeah, PT. Why don't we call it Atlantic Time? Why is it Eastern Time, but it's Pacific Time? Should be Eastern Time or Western Time or Atlantic Time, Pacific Time?
You're asking too many stupid questions early in the morning, Tyler.
Especially early for you.
Yeah, it's true.
Time zones. Thanks, farmers.
Full day of work today. So number 46.
Yeah.
Not a ton there.
Slim Pickens.
Tyler Matzik last year. Edward Cabrera in 2012. Remember him?
Sure.
He was supposed to be good with his changeup. I think he made one start, gave up 1,000 runs, and was sent into the sun. Jason Hamill from 2009-2011. Still a very successful major league pitcher.
Yep.
That was one we let get away.
Yep.
Zach McClellan in 2007. Miguel Asensio in 2006. Bobby C. in 2005, Tim Horicola with two K's in 2004,
I always
Matt
that
Miller,
name.
But not that Matt Miller in 2003, Todd Blitz, doesn't exist, John Wasden, 2000-2001, Greg Harris in 94, 6 years, nobody wore number 46.
Yeah, what? Like a billion people wore it between 2000 and now,
yeah,
and nobody wore it after 94?
Yeah, because, I mean, it was a tribute to Greg Harris, man.
I guess.
And then Kent Bottenfield, 1993-94.
Wowzers!
Yeah,
a whole lot.
It's Bottenfield or Hamill, but I don't know. Like, yeah. But did Bottenfield start opening day in?
Yeah, Bottenfield. He started. He did not start opening day in Denver, but I believe. Oh, he did not for the Rockies. He started opening day in
That's
Denver
right,
for
the Expos, yeah.
And then he was later brought to the Rockies. Yeah.
That season,
which is very strange. That same season, yeah. He was traded for Butch Henry on July 16th of that year. He was a fourth-round draft pick, Kent Bottenfield, and actually did not fare horribly with the Rockies, given inaugural season standards, 3-5 with a 6.10 ERA. He made 14 starts. He struck out 30 in 76 2/3, and he walked 38.
So maybe he didn't fare that great.
His whip was 1.617. All right.
38 walks.
His ERA plus was 79.
In 76 2/3. He was an all-star in 1999 with the Cardinals, though.
How random.
18-7 with a 3.97 ERA.
Wouldn't it be amazing to be a fan of a team like the Cardinals where just everybody is good? You just
acquire
somebody.
Yeah, all the time.
And they're
automatically
good.
You could pick up just scrap heap and just they'll be all-stars eventually.
So Ken Bottenfield, we'll settle on that. We'll settle on the Ken Bottenfield Memorial Edition. Why not?
Or, I mean, Jason Hamill was pretty good with the Rockies.
Hamill was a good one. Hamill would be a good one. I say we go Bottenfield. Let's say we go retro with episode number 46.
Yeah, let's go the more walks than strikeouts plus, as a pitcher.
Jason Hamill is like the girl that you dated before the two of you were mature enough to realize what you had in your relationship. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you see Jason Hamill around now and you're like, God, I wonder what that would have been like.
Yeah, and you're just like, man, like it's
could have made it work.
Looking pretty good, you know? Like
yeah.
It's
yeah, he still looks good. You know?
Yeah, like yeah.
He's still like he's making his new partner very happy.
Like to see the numbers he's putting up, and you go, you know what? Like Yeah. I'm not sure if it would really translate to happiness with me.
Right.
But I'm glad that he's doing well.
Right, exactly. You know? Like, you're happy for his success, but there's a part of you that, like, watches him go. You know, like, you linger a little bit longer.
Yeah, I mean, there's always a slight double take when you see Jason Hamill's pitching game. You go,
this is like one of our creepiest topics ever.
Oh, yeah, Forrest Wall, Tyler.
Oh, Forrest. He homered again yesterday.
Did he now?
Oh.
Get out of here.
All right, so the Jason Hamill Memorial Edition with runner-up honorable mention honors to Kent Bottenfield, who started opening day at Mile High Stadium not for the Colorado Rockies and was a Colorado Rocky later that year. Why not? And hopefully we'll see Tyler Bratzik back here not in 46, but hopefully we'll see him soon in one number or another. Yeah, not a real fun
24 hours. It was a really bad off day for the Rockies.
Yeah, really. Yeah. It, like, as if an off day could be as bad as it was yesterday, the Rockies figured out a way to make that possible. So how should we even start this? I guess we'll start with the story as we had it on MILB.com yesterday. Quote, Colorado's number two prospect David Dahl will reportedly miss the rest of the season after successful surgery to repair a lacerated spleen Thursday, according to Yahoo Sports' Jeff Passan. Dahl was sent to the hospital to be examined and treated for that, as well as a possible concussion and rib injury following a collision in the outfield during AA New Britain's game with Altoona on Thursday. Dahl was in center field in the sixth inning. Altoona right fielder Stetson Alley hit a shallow fly ball to center. Dahl came rushing in. Shortstop Trevor Story and second baseman Juan Ciriaco went out from the infield. Story broke off of his path before getting to Dahl, but Ciriaco at the last moment, it appears when you watch the video, finally tries to get out of the way, but he sort of realized that the only way he could go was to his left, which was right into the path of Dahl. Basically, the only thing that Ciriaco could have done otherwise is, like, stop and make a spin move like he was, you know, 1994 Barry Sanders. Tried to leap out of the way. Instead, his knee collided with Dahl's torso, chest, head, and caused some pretty massive damage and some pretty scary damage. Jeff Passan from Yahoo tweeted that doctors reportedly found bleeding, internal bleeding in David Dahl. He underwent surgery yesterday afternoon. His father, Mike Dahl, told AL.com, quote, they're just trying to save the spleen now. He got hit in the face, the nose, the spleen, a bunch of different places, but that's the main thing right now. He probably has a minor concussion, I would imagine, because he doesn't remember much about what happened. No broken bones or nothing. All the CT scans were negative. But David Dahl is going to miss the rest of the year. The good news is the surgery was successful, and he tweeted last night, quote, thank you for all the thoughts and prayers. It was a fluke incident, but God has a plan for me. Minor setback for a major comeback. But, man, David Dahl cannot catch a break. This is his second lost season in 2 years.
His whole career, basically, he's had one thing go wrong or another. And thankfully, when he does come back, and he will come back, he'll be very, very strong when he comes back next year, you have to imagine. He's only going to be, 22 years old?
Right. He's 21 right now. He'll be 22 on April 1st.
And it's so disappointing because after a slow start, he only hit .222 in the month of April for the Rockcats as a 21-year-old in AA, which is still young for the circuit.
Yeah.
He hit .307 in 25 games in the month of May. A couple of home runs, 11 driven in. You know, the OPS up over .750. He was, you know, 8 steals in 10 attempts. He was slowly starting to figure it out. And even yesterday, he was 2-for-3 before he got injured and had to leave the game. So it's a huge setback for not only the Rockies as an organization, but for the kid as well. You feel so bad for David Dahl. You know, he lost a season 2 years ago with the hamstring. His hamstring basically exploded on a play. Right.
I mean, and that was after missing a month due to a disciplinary issue.
Right.
Came back, played 10 games, then his hamstring pretty much exploded while he was trying to beat out a ball to first.
Yeah, and this is just an absolute fluke accident. This kind of things happen. It is kind of what happened to Byron Buxton last year.
Yeah, yeah, so it really
is. Byron Buxton, one of the pretty much the consensus top prospect in all of minor league baseball this year by a number of publications. Last year, he missed almost the entire 2014 season. His first day in AA last year, he was diving for a ball in, you know, I think right center field and smashed right into his right fielder, end up missing basically the rest of the season. He did. After that, it was in August, I believe. Yeah, August 13th, the game against Bowie. He missed the rest of the season after that. He didn't have, I don't think, as extensive injuries as David Dahl in terms of, like, the internal stuff. But
right.
I think he had a concussion and, you know, broken bones and whatever. But, you know, you look at what Byron Buxton's doing this year. I know, obviously, like I said, it's not the exact same injury, but Buxton this year for Double-A Chattanooga, he's hitting .266 with 6 home runs and 11 triples. He's OPSing .840. So, you know, he came back afterwards, came back as strong as ever, basically, and he's, you know, certifying his number one status as the, you know, minor league's top prospect. And you have to hope that David Dahl can do that next year because, you know, giving yourself what's ostensibly going to be about 10 months off of competitive play at this point, if he's out for the year and coming into next year, that should be enough to get him back into game shape. But, man, he just feels terrible. You never want to see these things happen to anybody, and it sucks when it happens to you and your organization because the Rockies had big plans for him this year. You know, if all things would have kept going well, you could have ostensibly seen him in Denver in September for a cup of coffee, and then,
yep.
You know, who knows?
David Dahl tweeted this morning, this is about an hour ago, tweeted, quote, and this is a very, my co-host of the Minor League Podcast, Jake Seiner, just retweeted it a minute ago and said, gotta love a kid coming out of surgery exuding hashtag want. And this is what David Dahl said, quote, for the people who think I'm injury prone or think that I play the outfield recklessly, then you are out of your mind. I play the game the hard and the right way. That will never change. If you look at the video, I called the ball and the infielders did try getting out of the way. It was just unfortunate and a fluke thing. I'm very upset about this happening to me, but I know God does have a plan. It's not about how hard you hit. It's not about how hard you get hit. It's about how hard you get hit and keep moving forward. I will work hard slash smart to get healthy and continue to pursue my dream. Thank you for all you guys' thoughts, prayers, and support. It truly means a lot. I have a great group of people in my life. God bless.
That's awesome.
To see that from a kid this morning, not even 24 hours after undergoing surgery to save an internal organ, that is outstanding.
Yeah.
That is awesome. Really cool to see from David Dahl. And to say, I don't play reckless. This is my style of baseball. This is how I'm always going to play baseball. That is cool.
And honestly, you saw the play. If you see the video online going
right,
out.
He's right.
MLB.com, like, he's absolutely right.
Exactly.
It wasn't like he was recklessly charging into the infield or the infielders right. were recklessly charging out to him.
Or it somebody else was trying to call him off and obviously had a play on it and he just barreled into somebody.
It was a Texas leaguer dropping into no man's
right.
land. So the shortstop, the center fielder, second baseman all try to converge and make the play. He had the better shot. He called everybody off. But,
which is what he's supposed to do. He's a center fielder.
It's his ball. And you know, these things happen.
You know,
it sucks.
Right.
But they happen.
If you are not in this circumstance, the injury would have been a concussion and maybe a rib thing, basically no matter what, via a collision like that.
Right.
The freak nature of having your spleen get lacerated, that's what turns this into something so bad and so scary.
Right.
But that's the difference. It's not like David Dahl went, you know, It would have been one thing if he went full speed, 100%, smashed into a wall, whatever it is. And then you could say, whoa, 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 a little reckless.
Yeah, but like Bryce Harper in Dodger Stadium a couple years ago.
Right.
Yeah.
But this is just a kid playing the game the way that he knows how and playing it the right way. I mean, not like in an old-time stodgy man, plays the game the right way. But that's what a center fielder does. You're supposed to make that play. And he was there. He was going to make that play. It's not his fault. And to be honest, it's not Juan Siriaco's fault either.
No.
Because nobody knows what Siriaco was able to hear at that moment, and he did turn at the last second, see that David Dahl was coming, try to get out of the way. And in that moment, with that game speed, what else is he going to do?
Nothing. There's nothing you can do. I mean, these kind of things happen. I was actually talking to Kevin Burkhart yesterday. We were getting ready for the show, name drop. And you know, he worked as a sideline reporter for the Mets forever.
He's great.
He's awesome.
Great.
And he was there for the game where Mike Cameron and Carlos Beltran smashed into each other. And he said that sounded like a gunshot going off in those guys' head because they hit basically head-to-head. And both of them were basically knocked unconscious and out for a while after that. Like, that was one of the scariest outfield collisions you're ever going to see. And, you know, this one's just a freak thing. Like the spleen thing is crazy. Like, the angle that it had to have hit him for that to happen, you probably couldn't recreate that if you tried it 2,000 times.
Right, exactly. This is an interesting one. I was trying to remember, because I don't think it was that collision with Mike Cameron. I think it might have been the collision with Johnny Damon. And who was that he collided with? Damian?
Oh, yeah.
Somebody who was on the Rockies for a hot minute. But I remember that in one of those collisions, somebody took a player's tooth to the forehead and suffered like a deep gash from it.
Yeah, that's right. I remember
and
that.
I Googled that, and what I was looking for didn't come up, but this story did. Baseball player swallows tooth in outfield collision. Quote, two St. Louis outfielders were injured last night in an exhibition game between the Browns and the Oakland Acorns of the Pacific Coast League. Center fielder Paul Lehner, a Brown regular, and right fielder Dick Kokos, a rookie up from Toledo, collided in the outfield while both were trying to snag a line drive hit by Oakland's Billy Martin. Kokos reportedly suffered a gash on the head and an injured shoulder. He was taken from the field on a stretcher and rushed to Permanente Hospital. Lehner had two teeth knocked out and swallowed one. He walked from the field but was removed from the game. That was March 19th, 1949. Gross.
Wow.
Gross.
Also, can we talk about this for a second? David Dahl walked off the field.
Yeah, under his own power.
Yeah.
That is, man, with a lacerated spleen, with internal bleeding.
Yeah.
So, I mean, more than anything, we're just, you have to be very happy that David Dahl is okay, obviously.
Yes.
And this is something that it may affect him going forward, but he's going to be okay health-wise and life-wise, and that's what matters. Because everybody's going to be like, oh, Rockies can't even develop prospects. Look at this kid. He's just getting hurt. At least he didn't lose an internal organ yesterday. It's a freak thing. You know, it could have happened in a bike accident. It could have happened, you know, falling down a staircase. It's just a freak thing.
Carrying deer meat upstairs.
Right, like, exactly. And we're just really happy David Dahl's okay. And, man, I really love to see that tweet this morning from him. That is outstanding.
That's awesome. And by the way, I just want to give a shout-out to everybody on our timeline who brought up Peter Forsberg's
right?
3 at the exact same time yesterday, including us. That was awesome.
That we have some very knowledgeable and, you know, very topical, timely fan base.
I guess. Well played, all of you guys.
Nice job, guys. So David Dahl out for the rest of the season. What do you think this does for his developmental timeline? I would assume at this rate he'll go back to New Britain. Well, he'll go back to Hartford to start next year.
Yeah,
and join the Yard Goats.
And thankfully, he'll still be young for the circuit.
Right. So. And yeah, exactly. That's the crazy thing. David Dahl, he's another one. It feels like he's been around for 100 years because, you know, he was drafted in 2012, but Dahl is going to be 22 next year. That's still pretty decently under the average age for Double A.
He's going to be 22 with two lost seasons and still young for Double A.
And still be a top three prospect
and
in the
putting up numbers wherever he's gone. Yeah. That's pretty amazing.
But I would assume that's going to be the plan for him next year. I would assume that he'll go to Hartford. He'll play in the new ballpark. They'll get him acclimated. And as he progresses, you know, if he comes out well, then maybe he heads to Albuquerque. You know, I think that's – I don't want to say a luxury, but I think it's a good thing for the Rockies is that you don't feel the need to push him. This isn't somebody like, you know, if this happened to, let's say, Kyle Parker is 25, you wouldn't think like, oh, man, we got to get him back and kind of push him and see how he can go when he gets back.
Yeah.
But that,
I would imagine that they're going to take it easy with him. I bet
right.
I would give them a couple of months at the very, very least in Hartford next year to make sure that he's okay. And then they can start worrying about bringing him up or depending on how well he's doing, of course. If he's doing well and, you know, putting up numbers, then they can bring him up after a couple of months to make sure that he's going to be alive, I think.
Man, what a horrible day. It's an off day, and the Rockies can't even stop from getting screwed. Dahl, David Dahl's father, was there at the game, got to ride in the ambulance with him. I guess that's, like, the one silver lining in this is, like, man, at least. Could you imagine if you were a parent? Yeah. Like, if his dad was at home in Birmingham and somebody called him and was like, all right, David was in a collision, and he lacerated his spleen. He's in surgery right now. Like, how terrible.
Yeah.
Top prospect in the organization via Baseball America, number two in the organization via MLB.com. Ooh. So all the best to David Dahl to
get well soon, buddy. We'll see you next year.
All right, what do we got next up?
Well,
Anthony?
The your Colorado Rockies, in case you haven't noticed, have been playing a lot better baseball as of late.
Who?
Or at least a little bit better baseball as of late.
Who?
Last 8 games, the Rockies are 5-3, and more importantly, in that time, they have drawn 28 walks, the most in the National League in that time frame. Also hitting 11 home runs. In that time, and also averaging over 6 runs per game. So that's been a good sign at the very, very least, considering a couple of weeks ago when we had this podcast, we were talking about how much their plate discipline had basically cratered since the hiring of Blake Doyle. And in the last couple of weeks, we have seen a marked improvement.
Since we talked about it. Not saying, just saying.
Not saying, just saying, but we're totally saying.
Obviously, that's what it was. Jeff Breidich was just like, hey, that's a pretty good point. Let's
go. They are currently not the worst team in plate appearances per walk anymore.
Hey!
The Kansas City Royals, they own that one.
We're not number one. Number one.
But they're also now, they have cracked the 100 walk mark on the year as a team. So they were, it was them and the Royals for a while there.
On May 27th.
Had not cracked 100 walks as a team.
Oh, man.
No, it's been slowly, slowly getting better for the Rockies. And there's a lot of good things to look at. Namely, one guy, I think you might know him. His name is Nolan Arenado.
Nolan Arenado.
He has been a pretty good player over the course of his career, but we all knew that. Over the last few days, however, he has been a little bit out of his mind.
Yes. So just a bit.
Just a bit. So
he's a
let's just go through the last four games for Nolan Arenado. 9-for-16, 3 home runs, a triple, 10 driven in, batting average of .563, OPS of .1806. That's just in the last four games.
Oh, he's batting .500 over his last five games.
Yeah, well, I didn't say
he's
that.
He's batting .306 over his last 10. Like, all of the numbers are good, is what I'm saying.
So, like basically, this four-game stretch for Nolan is somewhat historic in Rockies history. There are very few guys who have put up a .550 average with 3 homers and 10 ribbies in a four-game span. Nolan Arenado is one. The last guy to do it, Ian Stewart, in 2009.
And we know he panned out.
Yeah. He hit .588 with 4 homers and 12 driven in over a four-game span in June of 2009. That was when the Rockies started to go on their run in the beginning of the playoffs. Only three other players have done it. Matt Holliday and Brad Hopp both did it in 2006. And then Preston Wilson did it twice in 2003.
Wow. That is...
Right?
When you're hearkening back to Preston Wilson, it's been a while.
Yeah.
It's been a while. I mean, you noted the Rockies have been playing better, not just, you know, the last few days, but really this has gone back for a couple of weeks now. They have split. They split three straight series, and then they won this most recent series at Cincinnati, which really goes to show the Rockies over their last couple of weeks now, you know, have played .500 baseball, which really goes to show you how horrid the beginning to the month of May was, because there was a stretch where the Rockies went 3-14. They were 10-7 on April 24th. They were 13-22 on starting the day on May 19th. So it kind of shows you how horrible things were. But they are playing better.
And for a team that's won four of their last five, they have a .284 ERA in that time as well.
Yeah.
And two of those games were against the Giants, who were basically the hottest team in baseball in that time. Chad Bettis got that going David Hale did well in the second game on Saturday.
Right.
And Chad Bettis with a near complete game on Sunday.
You know, which was really, that was a time that they needed it too, because that, you tweeted out something that felt so, I think it captured the emotion of the moment that, you know, like it's raining, it's miserable, they're playing like garbage. You know, they lost two games by a combined score of 21-16, those first two games against San Francisco. You know, they blew the game against Philadelphia on the 20th. It was just like an ugly few days, and you said when the weather was really bad, like, well, just like the rest of the season, the mood is miserable with this. Yeah. And that's kind of how it felt. And
abject
so,
misery, I think, was the term.
Yeah. And I think the season was sort of like nearing its nadir, you know, and then all of a sudden they bounce back. David Hale looks good. Chad Bettis looks phenomenal. They go out. Kyle Kendrick. What the hell was that?
75 pitches near like through the eighth. Like
and why do you lift him for Boone Logan? I know that Boone Logan has to throw eventually, but Kendrick
throws all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
He throws all the damn time.
You have a chance to actually let a guy go out and get a complete game win, and instead at 70 whatever pitches it was, you go out and you go get Boone Logan. 75 pitches and 7 1/3. What?
That's
really well.
Something that I don't get.
Really?
But that's just me.
But I mean, it doesn't take away from the fact that the Rockies looked very good in that series in Cincinnati. In the series opener, they rallied for a run in the ninth inning off of Aroldis Chapman to get a win, and they built that inning. Chapman walked Charlie Blackmon, DJ singled, Blackmon went to third, and then Nolan hits a sacrifice fly. That's how you build an inning. It's how you win a game, and they did it against Aroldis Chapman. He's throwing a billion miles an hour from the left side. People don't do that against Chapman, but they did.
No, they don't.
And yeah, they've won 4 out of 5, and now you take on a team who's not very good in the Philadelphia Phillies. And I think if you come out of that with a series win, you come home feeling pretty good about yourself. You would come home at 21-27, and you've got a chance to, you know, I don't think they really stack up that well against the Dodgers from what we've seen this season, but you get the Dodgers for 4, then you get a scuffling Marlins team for 3, and then you get the Cardinals for 3. So you've got a 10-game homestand with a chance to kind of build some momentum for yourselves.
And then you got like a crap sandwich because you got 2 really good teams, which are the bread, and then you got crap in the middle, which is the Marlins.
Oh, the Marlins. You see when the Marlins snapped their losing streak, they went swimming in their own pool at their
exactly.
own
park. They went and go and pweeged in the pool.
What?
Yeah.
What? And then they go on the road to Miami for 4. And then they have one of those weird like home and homes. They get Houston, 2 games in Houston, and then 2 games here.
Can we talk about those
maybe
Marlins?
Carlos Correa will be here by then.
Ooh.
That'd be fun.
Can we talk about the Marlins giveaways for the back to the Those were awesome.
They did a t-shirt that was the Gator logo from the Back to the Future, the book, the sports prospectus book about how the Marlins were the American League champions of 2015. What a great idea.
Yeah.
God, everybody does cool giveaways.
Yeah. Hey, but we had fedoras.
Yeah, that's cool. You know what's weird is like when they came out with the promo schedule, I was like, fedoras, seriously, it's 2006. But like 4 other teams in Major League Baseball have done fedoras this year. The Mariners did it, the Padres did it. Like, who? What?
D-backs did it last week, too. Yeah.
Where's the fedora thing coming from? Come on. But I think that's, you know, that's the thing you have to take away from this is like right now, they're really not playing that badly. And I think, you know, Anthony basically saved the season when he brought up all this about plate discipline and Blake Doyle, because obviously they listen.
Clearly. But I mean, thank you. Like, I'll take the credit.
Duh. But that's the thing. I mean, that is the takeaway from this. You know, is that it looks like they are starting to form an identity offensively.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's not just 9 guys going up there with different attitudes at the plate.
Right.
They have an idea of what they want to do at the dish. I mean, it's not asking a lot to take a couple of pitches too low. We'll get to that in a second.
Right.
But they've walked at least twice each of the last 8 games. They've walked 3 times in all but one of those. You know, then they had a no-walk game when they lost to Philly. But then, you know, they've sprinkled in 4 walk games over the last couple of weeks. And it's good to see. I mean, it's still incredible to see what they do in wins and losses in terms of taking pitches and taking base on balls. I mean, as of right now, so they've had 54 walks in their 19 wins. That's about almost 3 walks a game in their wins this season.
I don't do math.
Yeah. In their losses, they've had 47 walks in 26 games, which is roughly 1.8 walks per game.
Yeah, not good. Yeah, like that's okay.
It's a full other base runner in a game that they're literally handing you. It's a free pass.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that one can correlate to another, that more base runners can lead to more runs being scored for the team. And the more runs you score for a team, the more rope you give your pitchers, and whether or not they use that as a noose or that's up to them.
Often the case. There are a handful of guys that I want to give some quick shout-outs to before we talk about one Troy Tulowitzki. First of all, has anybody been happier ever to get out of AAA than Brandon Barnes?
No.
429 average, 1074 OPS through 9 games so far, 9 hits and 21 trips. He's doubled 4 times. He's scored 5 runs. He's driven in 3. Brandon Barnes looks like the spark the Rockies love from him when he is going well.
He replaced Drew Stubbs and almost equaled Drew Stubbs' 2015 season hit total in his first start.
Yeah, he had 4 hits in his first game.
Drew had 6 in his first 51.
In his first, you know, he was a pinch hitter for his first appearance. That was on the 20th and went 0-for-1. Then he was 4-for-4, and then he had a hit the next day against San Francisco as a pinch hitter in that game against the Giants in which the Rockies dropped the opener of the doubleheader 11-8. But then, you know, it's already five hits basically in your first two games. If you count two pinch hit appearances as sort of one combined performance. And, you know, we saw 7 weeks of Drew Stubbs without really getting that production.
Without getting – well, he had six hits and 51 at-bats. He was hitting 118 when they sent him down.
Was
with 31 strikeouts and 51 at-bats, which
now,
is
I will
almost
say,
impossible.
I will say one thing for Drew Stubbs. I very much respect the fact that he accepted the assignment to Albuquerque.
100%.
That shows to me a guy who is – you know, and no guy, I think the biggest misnomer of sports fans is just like, they just do it for the money. Like, no guy is just like,
no,
I'm just going to take
not.
My money and I'm
absolutely
not going to take this assignment to Albuquerque. But that being said, that shows me a guy who's like, I hate the way that I am playing right now. Yeah, if I need to go to the PCL and get it figured out, I'll go to the PCL and get it figured out.
Yeah,
I really respect
like Drew
that.
Stubbs was trying to suck.
Right, exactly.
That's what I was getting to, like, oh,
like the front
well,
office.
Blah, blah, blah. It's like,
they don't care about winning. They've
yeah.
only devoted their
they
entire
want to go
lives
their
to
paychecks.
This.
No, that's why they became professional athletes.
But Brandon Barnes, obviously want to give a shout-out to. Ben Paulson has been fantastic. And
phenomenal.
Ben Paulson is kind of another guy who we talked about a little bit last year, but he almost reminds you of a different type of Corey Dickerson in that a much higher draft pick, but everywhere he's been for the most part, he's been the same guy offensively. He batted .280 as a professional rookie in Tri-City back in 2009 after he was a third-round pick out of Clemson University, same alma mater as hashtag free Kyle Parker. Then the next year, OPS 827 in 130 games for Class A Advanced Modesto, 709 OPS in 136 games for Tulsa in 2011, went back to Tulsa in 2012, 713 OPS, then climbed to Colorado Springs. He has OPS'd 867 and 912 his last two seasons in AAA, and this year was at 764 and adds a little bit of pop. Last year, 20 homers, 18 the season before. Ben Paulson is a guy who offensively just kind of does what Ben Paulson does, and he's really flown under the radar as a prospect, I think, but when the Rockies have needed somebody to step into that role, Ben Paulson's been pretty good. So he's another guy who I think deserves some love because the Rockies have been thrown into a tough spot right now with what Justin Morneau is going through with suffering from his concussion symptoms again. But Paulson came up last year and in 31 games batted .317, .348, .571, four homers, 10 runs batted in. Very, very serviceable at first base. He's a much better option over there than Willene Rosario. But I really like what Ben Paulson's given them so far.
He's nearing 100 at-bats in the big leagues right now, and the average still is stick at .330 in his career. Per 162 games.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Out over a whole season, you put those numbers out, it's equals to 20 home runs, 59 driven in, and just under 100 strikeouts, 28 doubles. I think you take that from your first baseman
most
seasons.
Especially in a situation like the Rockies are now.
Yeah, where he's your backup first baseman.
There's so much uncertainty as to what is going to happen, what's going on right now with Justin Morneau. But I really like that from Ben Paulson.
Oh, I think Ben Paulson has done a phenomenal job so far. I feel like he always gives you a good at-bat.
Right. Right.
And he's not going to be a guy who's going to hit 50 homers, but he's a gap-to-gap kind of hitter first baseman, kind of like a Sean Casey kind of style, where he can just go
the mayor.
You know, yeah, left center to right center.
Right.
And, you know, he'll get under some balls, get some home runs, especially in Coors Field. But, you know, I think he's just a good hitter, I think. He's shown that throughout his minor league career. But you also mentioned hashtag Free Kyle Parker. Free Kyle Parker is having quite a last half of the month of May.
Yes, he
in
is.
Albuquerque. His last 15 games for Kyle Parker, hitting .373 with three homers, 13 driven in, scored nine runs, three doubles. The OPS sitting above 900 in that time. So Kyle Parker, as he does in every single league he has been
here
in, starting
comes.
Slowly.
Exactly.
Starting slowly, but he always ends up putting up basically the same numbers at the end of the season.
And
the one thing I would say is a little bit troubling, in that time, 15 games, 11 strikeouts, no walks.
Right.
That is a little bit troubling, but he's been hitting the ball so well and with such authority, you can kind of let it go.
He struck out 46 times in 42 games overall this season, but I do like that Kyle Parker has been mixed around a lot more recently between first base and left field. He made his last two starts at first base. He has played five games there really over the last week to week and a half. And he was primarily playing in the outfield for the first, you know, 6 weeks of the season. So the Rockies, that was one thing that Jeff Breidich said to me at the end of last year for our MILB.com story on the organization All-Stars is that, you know, Kyle knew that he needed to do a lot of work at first base, but he was excited to do that work, and the Rockies were excited to see what he could do when he devoted himself to that. Now, it seemed a little odd then that they were playing him so much in the outfield in spring training and to start this year, but it looks like they're getting him back into that mode. Now, obviously, you know, Ben Paulson's not there, Willian Rosario's not there, so he's kind of the option at first base. But if Parker is going to develop, I mean, he's a first-round pick. If he's going to develop as a first baseman, you got to put him at first base.
Yeah.
So yeah, I like so that. I like that try. From Kyle Parker lately. Another homer yesterday for him.
A much better chance of playing first base in Colorado than the outfield.
Right, right, exactly.
Especially with the guys they have in the system coming up.
Definitely. The other couple of guys who I think we really need to laud for a moment, David Hale and Chris Rusin, who came up and threw the type of game that nobody expected him to throw. Really, nobody expected either of those guys to throw. But Chris came up and made the start on the 26th against the Reds in place of the injured, I guess you could call it injured, maybe sort of just, you know, kind of tweaked Jorge De La Rosa.
Tore like a blister on his
right
hand.
Not really like an injury, just kind of like a thing that forces
when Jorge De La Rosa looked down, he saw blood, said Nick Groke.
That was the best tweet then, ever.
I wish he would have put my column next to it. That'd have been perfect.
But the lefty Rusin comes up and goes 7 innings, 4 hits, 1 run. He did walk 4, but he struck out 5. A very, very, very good outing that they got from him, and they needed that.
Yeah, and that was a game they ended up losing in Cincinnati.
Yeah, yeah, and they still got a solid day. So just, you know, some guys who are a little bit unheralded over the last couple
David
of days.
David Hale came over from the Braves in the offseason in the Jose Briseño and Chris O'Dowd trade, correct?
Right, right. Yeah. Chris O'Dowd.
Yeah, I kind of just got rid of that other OD.
All right. Enjoy Atlanta.
Yeah.
I think he's in Mississippi right now. He's in double.
Probably.
But anyway, so we just wanted to, you know, they've been playing good baseball. Guys deserve to be, they deserve to
absolutely.
Be given a little bit of credit on this podcast that I'm sure they all listen to.
You know who's not playing good baseball right now?
Who?
One Troy Tulowitzki.
What?
How's that for a segue?
Look at that.
Tulo in 43 games this year, hitting .266, a OBP at .286, just a little bit down from his career mark of .370.
And it has plummeted over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, the .688 OPS is by far the worst mark of his career. I'm not counting the 25 games he played in 2006 when he came up as a rookie in OPS .609.
Tulo was a .313 hitter on May 8th, by the way.
Yeah.
3 weeks ago, his averages dropped 50 points or so.
So what are you saying?
Not a real good stretch.
Oh, that's what you're saying.
Not a real good stretch. Tell us why, Anthony.
Well, as you mentioned in that time frame, he's hitting .189 over the last 15 games with 2 extra base hits, 8 RBI. He has walked 3 of his 5 times, though, in that time. But the OPS at .454 in that time for one Troy Tulowitzki.
Yikes.
But there was a great article by Owen Watson on Fangraphs. They actually relayed it on Jabo.com, which we had CJ Nitkowski on last week. He was fantastic. Jabo.com is a Rob Nyer, brainchild. It's a baseball writing website, kind of like Baseball Grantland is
right,
what we kind of wanted to call it. So Rob Nyer started it, but we get
Rob Nyer is so great.
Yeah.
I love Rob Nyer.
Contributions from Baseball Prospectus, from Fangraphs, from guys like Ken Rosenthal, JP Morosi, and then, of course, CJ Nitkowski. They all write for it. Check it out. It's an awesome website. And he had a article called Troy Tulowitzki is More Aggressive, Less Productive. And basically, he was ironing out the fact that Tulo right now is chasing more pitches than he ever has at any point in his career, chasing pitches out of the strike zone. And when he does chase those pitches, he's making contact with those pitches at by far the lowest rate he ever has his entire career. So it's a thing called O swing percentage and O contact percentage. O swing percentage is the amount of pitches a hitter swings at that are outside the strike zone. So outside swing percentage. That number right now for Troy Tulowitzki is over 37%. Now, his career mark in that is about 26. Last year it was 28. You know, so 37% is by far the highest amount of pitches he has swung at outside the strike zone in his career. And usually when he does swing at pitches outside the zone, he can make contact with those pitches. He's got a very good bat, good plate discipline most of the time. So his average O contact percentage, the amount of pitches a hitter swings at outside the strike zone where they end up making contact, his career mark is 74%, which is pretty good. You know, he's not Vladimir Guerrero, but he's pretty good. A pitcher outside the strike zone, he can still make contact with it, hit it with authority around the field. This year, that mark is just at 66%. That's about 8% down from his career total, career average. So that is by far the lowest mark of his career as well. So he is more aggressive, swinging at more crap outside the strike zone, and this time he's not making contact with it for whatever reason. Now, I had a little bit of a theory that Tulo is trying to take pitches, but he always seems to find himself down at the count 0-1. Whenever he takes a pitch, it's always a called strike. And there is a little bit to that right now. His first strike percentage, so the first pitch strike percentage this year, is at a career high for Troy Tulowitzki, 63%. So there may be a little bit to that when his career mark is about 59%. Could be something to that where he wants to maybe take some more pitches, but then he finds himself down the count 0-1, and then he sees a decent pitch on the next pitch and has to swing outside the strike zone, and then all of a sudden he looks up and it's 0-2. That could be a possibility. But right now, basically what it is Troy Tulowitzki is expanding his strike zone worse than he ever has in his career at this point, and it is doing him absolutely no favors whatsoever.
Yeah, it's just not the Tulo that we're accustomed to seeing. And when they need him as badly as this team has needed him, that's when it becomes more highlighted how badly he's struggling. I mean, his walk rate versus the league average. Last year was a career high walk rate. His walk percentage was 13.3%. This year he's at 2.7%. And, you know, there's going to be some variation in those numbers. His career low was 8.4%. That came all the way back in 2007. But last year, it had been on a steady climb. He was at 9.4% in 2012, 11.1% in 2013, 13.3% last year. And then all of a sudden, it just fell off a cliff. And, you know, there, if a headline could be more accurate, I don't know what it would be other than this one, which is that he's being more aggressive and it's being less productive. It's resulting in less of what we need to see from Troy Tulowitzki. And that is something that I think concerns you because, you know, now that we're back into, I think, a normal era of athletes and baseball players, guys don't really get better after 30. You know, like there's a few good years in there still, but it's not like we're going to see the Troy Tulowitzki of 3-4 years ago a whole lot. You hope you will, but
yeah,
it's that somewhat, I think, worries you going forward, especially with the amount of money that the Rockies have tied into him. And especially if you want to make him an attractive trade target, if that's really what the Rockies are hoping for. And right now, that's not what we're seeing from Troy Tulowitzki. I mean, May has been really these last 2 weeks of May have been just absolutely brutal. And it's not, you know, his numbers against right-handed pitching are horrendous. Against lefties, he's batting 351, 359, 514. That's an 872 OPS. It does obviously concern you that he's taken one walk. But against righties, he's batting 239, 262, 368. That's a 630 OPS. He's got 28 hits and 117 at-bats.
And just, for all the talk about people, you know, always say about, oh, Tulo strikes out too much. Well, this year he's swinging and missing more than any time in his career. He is swinging and missing almost a quarter of the swings he takes. He's at 24% right now where he swings, he does not make contact. His career mark is 17%.
Oh, man.
There's not a lot of things you can look at Tulo's line this year and go, oh, well, at least, nah. There's not a lot there.
And right? You know what's weird, too, is like a few weeks ago, like I was at a game against, I think it was the game against the Diamondbacks, one of the early May games where, you know, Tulo's like up over, maybe it was against the Dodgers, Tulo's up over 300, he's, you know, a 307 hitter, whatever it is, and you think to yourself, like, Tulo's hitting 307 and it does not feel like Tulo is having a 300 season at all. You know, like you don't, when Tulo comes up, you're not like, all right, finally. Like, it's like, what's going to happen now?
The one number I guess I could look at, his line drive percentage is a tick above his career average. He's at 23% right now, career average at 21. So he is hitting line drives.
Just got to hit more
when he makes contact, but he's swinging and missing more than he ever has in his career, and he's chasing shit out of the strike zone, which he does not need to do anymore.
It's not something that he regularly has done ever, at any stretch throughout his career. We haven't seen this.
And the thing is, he didn't forget how to hit. Like, that's,
no.
He's got too much of a sample size in his career to go, oh, well, he just lost it. No, that's not what happened. For whatever reason, the discipline this year has gone off the charts. When you see sharp spikes like that, what we've seen, because he put together basically the same peripheral numbers for the first, whatever, 8 seasons of his career. Almost the exact same, even when he only played 47 games or played 151 games. It didn't matter. Those kind of numbers will basically even out over a long period of time. So when you see the huge spikes in the numbers like that, you can call small sample size, and in some ways it is. It's only 43 games. We're still sitting here at the end of May. But he's going to have to really work hard to make those numbers this season look like the rest of his career. And it needs to start tonight, to be perfectly honest. It needs to start as soon as possible. Because I imagine if Tulo stays healthy by the end of the year, he'll probably be putting up more close to what we are used to seeing of his normal numbers. Like around 300, over 800 OPS, 20-plus homers. But he's got to start soon if he's going to start doing that this year.
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, we've even seen marginal improvement from Carlos Gonzalez over the last couple of weeks. Like, he's not hitting great, but we've seen a few more, you know, a few less three-game stretches without a hit, that type of thing. And Cargo is certainly not putting together the season that we expect from him on a regular basis. 208 average, a 610 OPS. But even Cargo, you've seen signs of life. Tulo, it seems like, just looks lost now. I mean, sometimes he chases stuff that you just scratch your head at.
Yeah, and of course, the one I remember from this past series was the one against Chapman, where he swung at a pitch literally over his head. He tomahawked it.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, dude, I know he swung 105, but...
Right, exactly, but probably not going to hit it anyway. Yeah, it's, you know, it's been nice that they have not been playing horrible baseball of late. So hopefully that continues into more non-horrible baseball.
Yeah, and a couple of quick notes here on
a couple of
hitters. I mean, you look at what Nolan Arenado has done this year, more good things. He's seeing a lot more off-speed pitches this year. And that's a good thing, because this year on off-speed stuff, Nolan Arenado is hitting 312 on off-speed pitches.
Ridiculous.
And just 264 on fastballs, which is
Man.
And so that's always nice to see. And, of course, 8 of his 10 home runs this season have come on the road, when last year he had 18 home runs, 16 of which came at Coors Field.
Yeah.
So must be the altitude.
It's very weird that this team is struggling at home this year. Like, it's so strange. The numbers, it's not a standard. I mean, obviously the numbers are going to be better at home no matter what when you're the Rockies. But Rockies are batting 293 as a team at home, 245 on the road. But on the road, their record is 11-13, and they are only 8-13 at home this year. Pitchers have posted a 543 ERA at home, 440 on the road. But they're just not like... Even with the numbers that they have, you know, it's kind of what we talked about a few weeks ago. They're putting up all these good individual numbers, and they don't seem to be translating at all to a whole lot of success.
Right.
Scored 105 runs at home and 89 on the road so far, and it's not translating into that dominant Coors Field advantage that you want. Another guy, sorry.
I got to talk quickly about here, Charlie Blackmon. Blackmon had another good April, and he's still having a decent season overall right now. He's getting better in the outfield, better reads. He's getting on base quite a bit. He's stealing bases, too, which is a new thing for Blackmon. He's 10 of 13 in stolen base this year. Had a three-steal game against Cincinnati on Memorial Day. 7 home runs, 19 ribbies, 782 OPS. But a trend we have seen in the month of May is basically how pitchers are attacking Charlie Blackmon. In April, he saw about 55% fastballs, 45% off-speed pitches, which is pretty much standard. On fastballs in the month of April, he hit 386 against off-speed pitches, just 190. Okay, so like that's fair. Usually, fastballs, guy can hit fastballs more. But you look at the month of May, he's seeing more fastballs this month, 61%, up from 55, and he's hitting just 196 against fastballs this year, but in May, but 286 against off-speed pitches. Now here's why. You can see where he's getting these pitches from the mound. He's seeing a lot more inside fastballs right now. So guys are just busting him in, because they know that he is not very good at hitting pitches on the inside half of the plate. In the month of May, he is seeing about 30% inside pitches, hitting 143. In the middle of the plate, hitting just 200. When he sees pitches on the outside part of the plate, he's good at going the other way or hooking the baseball down the right field line. That average at 333 right now. But you can see just a huge marked difference in how pitchers are attacking Charlie Blackmon right now. Fastballs hard in, and that is how they're getting him out effectively.
Charlie Blackman has been awful against left-handed pitching, by the way, this year, which is not something that's entirely new, but in 51 ABs against lefties, a 157 average of 507 OPS. He's murdering right-handed pitching, 306 and 896, respectively. Six of his seven homers have come against righties. He's driven in 15 of his 19 RBIs this year against right-handers. But, yeah, Charlie Blackman, I think, is a puzzle who teams somewhat can easily solve.
Right.
When he gets going well, it seems like he has easy holes to exploit. I think that's what we've seen over the last couple of seasons. He's a very serviceable guy, but again, 291, 347, 465 in April, 233, 333, 419 in May. The thing that you like is that he's still taking pitches. He's still figuring out a way on base, even when he's, you know, somewhat struggling. He's taken eight walks this month in 23 games, took seven last month in 21. So that you like to see. But there are things that it seems like teams are able to exploit with Charlie Blackman easier than they can figure it out with a lot of other guys.
And you wonder if he's just going to be a platoon guy eventually pretty soon.
Right.
His career splits aren't bad. He's a 270 career hitter against lefties. So you wonder.
It makes the David Dahl injury hurt so much more.
Yeah, but you wonder if they might start just putting Brandon Barnes in there against lefties and sitting Charlie Blackman on the bench if he continues to struggle.
Yeah.
We'll see if that manifests itself as the season wears on.
Brandon Barnes. Man, I love me some Brandon Barnes. Okay. He's so fun. What else we got today? You got to get going to work, I know.
I got to get going to work, yeah. We got Mark Sweeney and Frank Thomas on the show tonight with Kevin Burkhart. We celebrated Frank Thomas's birthday yesterday.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, you got him a cake.
Turned 47. Yeah.
When are you going to get CJ Nikoski a cake? Because I saw him on Twitter asking when cake day comes for him, you jerk.
Yeah, because, no, it was funny. We had that yesterday, and then the day before, we had Daniel Cormier is a UFC fighter, works at our network. He won a heavyweight title belt on Saturday. And so they had like a whole thing when he came into work on, I believe it was Wednesday, where like, we all just kind of gathered around outside and like a huge cake. It was like a surprise party being thrown for him. And so we had a huge cake, like said, congratulations, champ and stuff. And then we had the Frank Thomas cake yesterday. And so, yeah, I think CJ, he wonders when he's going to get his own cake. I figured a St. John's Hall of Famer like CJ Nitkowski is would be able to get a cake. I mean, it's him and Chris Mullen, you know, in the Hall of Fame together.
The Red Storm.
I'm imagining they could probably work something out.
Yeah, why not?
So we have to get really, really good at one thing.
Like the Seinfeld episode, just get a cake for like a person on a sick day. Get well soon. We wish you to get well. What?
I love how we started this episode. I was like, all right, we can do like 40 minutes.
Maybe yeah, I know. And now you're going to be late.
And now it's like an hour.
Sorry. Yeah. Fantastic. Well,
it didn't feel like it, Tyler. It never feels like it's that long with you.
It doesn't, buddy. Okay. Said. John Gray was scheduled to join us this week. Weird travel day in the PCL, as they all are in the PCL. They played on the road last night and had to fly overnight to Omaha. So, John Gray, the way that you travel in the PCL is like you set an alarm for 3 o'clock in the morning and you go catch a Southwest flight, and that does not sound fun at all. So they were in New Orleans last night, played a night game, got the win 4-2, by the way. Tommy Canley picked up the win that game. They're in Omaha tonight, so kind of a crazy travel day. So we're hoping to catch up with John Gray next week when they return home, as actually they are home against Omaha today. They're not in Omaha. I lied to you terribly. So we'll hope to catch up with John Gray next week when they're in a bit more of a normal schedule, and talk with the Rockies' top prospect about the way he's starting to turn his season around.
Yeah, and I've got to catch a 1:30 a.m. flight this morning to Indiana.
Ooh, that's gonna be fun. Why would anyone fly to Indiana and why
at 1:30 in the morning?
Indiana Mafia. What are you going to Indiana for?
A wedding, my cousin's wedding. Ooh. I'm meeting my parents there. I'm flying from LAX to, I think, Midway.
Okay.
At like from 1:30 in the morning to like 7:30, and then hopping like a regional jet to Indianapolis, and then we're driving an hour and a half to Terre Haute.
Oh.
And then we're coming back the next day.
Awesome.
Because my mom just retired after 40 years.
Yeah, that's cool.
Teaching, and so her last day was yesterday, but then she still has two more days of like in-service crap.
Nice.
On Monday and Tuesday, so she has to go and finish that out, then she's officially done. So she's flying out with my dad to Indianapolis.
Look at that. That's a solid retirement present. Let's go to Indianapolis.
Woo!
Go catch an Indians game. Indianapolis Indians game.
I wish.
Which I never thought was confusing until I wrote a story about the Indians last year, and one of our editors put a headline on it and called them the Tribe, and somebody got after me on Twitter and was like, the Tribe is Cleveland Indians. You can't call the Indianapolis Indians a Tribe. And I was like, I never really thought about that. They do. This person did not realize that two teams could have the same name. But I didn't think about the fact that, like, yeah, it's somewhat confusing that there's a AAA team named the Indians. It's not an Indians affiliate. That is a little weird. I never thought of that. Anyway, there's a segue. There's a random topic. Well, hey, enjoy Indiana, buddy.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Should be fun.
Will it?
Sweet.
Cool. It's going to be 24 hours, basically, of no sleep and drinking and yelling.
No sleep till Brooklyn. So, no sleep till Indiana.
No sleep till Terre Haute.
Oh, man. Episode number 46 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. Our big thanks to Drew Kriesman for submitting some music for today. You can follow the podcast on the old Twitter machine at Purple Dinocast. He is at Master Tones. I'm at Tyler Mon. Give our good friends at Purple Row a follow as well. Thanks to ESPN Denver and Purple Row for hosting us. You can check out Purple Dinosaur Podcast t-shirts at humblemonster.com. And we really do have more designs. Actually, we do. I'm submitting them this week to Tyler, so we'll have some more stuff coming up for the PDP. And
also Tyler and Kirsten will be coming out to LA.
Hey, that's fun.
Yeah.
Cool.
So Humble Monster taking LA.
Humble Monster takes the West Coast.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome. So go check out some of our stuff at Humble Monster and the rest of their stuff as well, because Humble Monster does fantastic work. And until next week, we'll talk to you next time.
Go Rockies.
It's so weird to not be able to end a show with Ben Badler from Baseball America joins the show.
It's over, Tyler.
For the first time, I miss it dearly.
Get a new joke.
All right, we'll talk to you guys next week.
Right. Bye. Bye. Back to the people, you know, just like whatever, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, psh, it's like, you know, like, oh, you know, just like whatever.